is the Fish Stick. Everything making news and the good stuff off the beaten path across the world of fishing. Your hosts for the Fish Stick are Brian Bennett in Seattle, Washington. Brian is co-captain of Boldy Chum and fly fishing sales manager for Patagonia. In Nebraska City, Nebraska, Teed Stouffer, executive director of Recycled Fish, the nonprofit of anglers living a lifestyle of stewardship, both on and off the water, because our lifestyle runs downstream. And from Denver, Colorado, Michael Morrow produces the Fish Stick from the studios of Morrow Media. And now, on with the Fish Stick.
It's Arbor Day, Friday, April 29th, 2011. Welcome to the latest episode of The Fish Stick. Teed Stouffer here from my home office in Nebraska City, Nebraska. And it's gorgeous today. Guys, I have a grant application I have to get out this afternoon for an EPA environmental education grant. And we totally need the grant. It's totally exactly what I should do. But man, do I want to go fishing. Brian Bennett, what's it like in Seattle, Washington?
It's Arbor Day?
It's Arbor Day today. Plant a tree, buddy.
God, was it like Earth Day last week and Arbor Day this week? Man, it's just all green like it is here in Seattle.
Oh, really?
It is beautiful. Gorgeous. I don't know if we're going to hit 60 today. We had a record run of no 60s, but it's spectacular. So after 4 months of rain, it's nice to see the sun finally. So
right on.
But I'm sure it's blazingly beautiful in Denver, Colorado, as always.
Yes, sir. Although they said it was supposed to be nice and then get bad tonight and blow in a storm tonight. But it's already started getting a little windy. So I think it's going to come in a little earlier, but it is really nice here in Denver. But I got to tell you guys, I was in Nashville, Tennessee the last 2 or 3 days. And
oh, you were?
Yeah, right in the middle of all those storms. And I got to tell you a funny story because I was meeting with these new clients that I'm going to start working with. And I stayed at a hotel about 2 blocks away just so I could get to that meeting pretty easily. And after our meeting was over, one of the guys said, hey, I'll call you up about 6 and go have dinner. So I had to kill a couple hours. So I went back over to the hotel and I just kind of sat there and I did a little work on the computer. And then I just laid back to get a little rest and took a little nap, right? Well, he calls me about 6 and he's like, okay, I just got out from underneath the stairwell. You know, we've been in tornado mode. And he's like, where'd you go? I said, well, I just was laying here on the bed. I had no idea there was a tornado warning in effect. There was something that came over the TV that said these counties are under tornado watch, and I don't know what county I'm in. You know, I'm just like, well, okay. You know, I didn't hear any sirens, so I just slept through it. But apparently a tornado was nearby, and I had no clue.
Oh, that's crazy.
So that weather was pretty intense. Flying in there, I didn't even know if I was going to be able to get into Nashville the night I went, but they flew through all the lightning and rain, and
wow,
it was actually kind of cool. But Denver, we got nice weather and prime time for fishing. I guess the mayflies are going to hatch here pretty quickly, right? 55 degrees, the water temperature.
Perfect. Yeah,
perfect.
And we're about there.
We are hearing a ton of amazing stories right now. The devastation in the Southeast is just awful, but the fruits of it are these amazing stories. And of course, our show, The Fish Stick, is presented by Spot Hug, which is a satellite-based device. It gives you peace of mind if you're a boater, both when you're in your boat and when you're not. And, you know, of course, our prayers and warm thoughts are with all these families who have lost loved ones or who are in hospitals recovering. And, you know, there's thousands upon thousands of people who are dealing with homes that are lost or damaged. And insurance claims are going to help, but this is a reminder that nature is crazy powerful. And, you know, if you can afford to be prepared in advance, you should. Spot Hug is one of the most useful tools for preparation if you're a boat owner because, you know, it lets you know what's going on with your boat. Whether weather's coming, if weather's coming or during a weather event or following a severe weather event, you know, if your boat got swept away in a tornado or something, you'd be able to find it if it had a Spot Hug unit in it. So, You probably, even before you got to your boat, know what kind of condition it was in. So if you can afford it, it's kind of a no-brainer. Get a Spot Hug. Stick it in your boat.
Right on. Also, you know, personal locator, too. Never know.
Never know.
It's come in handy. I got one. I love it.
I heard a story on NPR yesterday about this family, and it was interesting because it was on NPR, and they don't tend to, you know, faith language isn't necessarily something that winds up in every story on NPR, but this guy used a ton of it in telling his story, and he was telling his story from the hospital bed, but his, maybe you guys heard this story too, but his, their house got hit by a tornado, and to make a long story short, he grabbed the youngest son, his wife grabbed the middle son, and the third son, right when the tornado hit their house, he just got sucked out of the house. And this guy was talking about how they just started fervently praying, and their son just walked back in where the wall had been. Just amazing. Just amazing. And there's tons of amazing stories like that right now.
It's crazy.
Super cool. Yep. But still tragic for these people who have lost lots. So it's tough. It's tough. We do have some sunshine, though, in our guest today. Lawrence Utenier is a Canadian who's one of the hottest sticks on his local lakes. He's got a knack for getting a deep bend in his rod on big, big fish, so you know he's going to have some good fishing stories for us. But here's what makes him unique. He's blind. He's blind, but he still takes his boat out, and he enjoys successful outings on the water by himself. So how does he do it? He invented a boat that talks to him. It's amazing, and he's a funny dude. You're going to love today's fish stick. But first, Brian, what's new on the Chum?
Fish Stick News, a mashup of everything bubbling to the top of the pot on Moldy Chum and what's cooking at Recycled Fish.
Today, the all-time great. So I'm kind of cruising around the web, the internet, like I tend to do, looking for chum fodder, and I come across this scientist tests new Asian carp gun.
So the, I love the little Photoshop work there too.
So the war on Asian carp is escalating. It was electric fences. Well, now they have some kind of Asian carp cannon, apparently, that I don't know exactly how it works, but it creates energy to deter or kill a fish from kind of coming through the locks near Chicago, I guess is the plan. So I have an RSS feed for carp, so that was kind of the story. And then I stumble across this YouTube video that is gotta be, I mean, it's like Asian carp meets an episode of Jackass. And it is absolutely, so these guys, they call themselves the carp hunters, and they're from Peoria. And they basically dress up in armor and get behind a boat on water skis and have sharp bladed things and try to chop up the carp as they come flying by their heads. Put it that way. So anyway, if you got a chance, you should definitely check out that video. It's posted today, which is April 29th. So check it out. And I think the last time I looked, I can't remember how many views it had, but as my RSS feed kind of kept reloading, you get 10 carp stories and then, you clean them all out, and a few hours later, you go back and look. Every single one is a link to these guys' video, so I'm sure it'll be huge. Even the Seattle Times, I think, has picked up on it already. So
really, super funny. I already tweeted and posted and whatever that video. It's just so funny, but not funny that like that's what water skiing in the Great Lakes could become.
It's true. And then just on the other video side today, we posted this. He's a stand-up comedian who had this – he has a stand-up routine, and part of it's called I'm a Bear. Mm-hmm. And he has this whole – and his name is – hopefully I'll pronounce it right. It's Mike Birbiglia is his name.
Mike Birbiglia. Yeah, he's on Ira Glass has him on This American Life fairly frequently.
He's really, really funny. Well, he's taken to animating his stand-up routines. So he's doing the routine in the background. They have somebody – turned it into a cartoon. And the I'm a Bear is just hilarious to see anyway, but it's even funnier when animated. So if you have a chance, check it out. It's all about fly fishing in Alaska and kind of going through bear orientation and all that stuff. And it's just, you got to see it. It's really good.
Cool. I didn't watch. I can't wait to watch.
Yeah, it's a good one. So that's kind of what's going on today. I mean, obviously usual stuff happening all week, but thought I'd keep it kind of fresh and relevant. So that's what's going on today on the Chum on April 29th, Friday. What's going on with you other than grant writing, my friend?
Grant writing. I've been traveling this week. I was in Northeast Iowa. Had a good trip. We've gotten a lot of press in the last week from Milwaukee and Pittsburgh, Wired to Fish, lots more. Fish Itch is picking up steam, man. I'm so jazzed about this. Tell your buddies, fishitch.com. Thanks for putting it on the Chum. That is so super cool. We got a big, big bump after that. So. Save Scratch, Raise Cash. It's a new website where you can get half off deals on fishing tackle, and then a portion of the proceeds benefit recycled fish. So you're getting an unbelievable deal, and the money's going to conservation. It's a no-brainer. Fishitch.com. We're so jazzed about this. It's super cool. Super cool. We're all excited about it. And then we've got this.
Any hints? Yeah, you might go live. Are you still?
Well, I'll tell you. Yeah, we'll let the cat out of the bag. If all goes as planned, May 9th is when the first deal is going to drop. There's a few more things that need to happen, but we're looking pretty good for May 9th to be the first deal dropping. So sometime in May, for sure. But May 9th, if we're lucky. Yep. And then we've had this little contest going on where we encouraged our members to help us come up with a funny fundraising t-shirt or just a good fundraising t-shirt for summer. Last winter, we did that. Of course, our rods are short. It's freezing out here shirt. And it was really good. Like, it raised a bunch of money for our cause. So we were like, we need a funny shirt for summer. We should have our members come up with it. And people have been coming up with good stuff. Some of it's funny and some of it's like poignant or whatever. Here's a few favorites that have rolled in. I threw up on the rocks and this is what I got. And it's a picture of a bass. Ha ha. Fishermen would like it. Got a rod, get bent. And a bent rod image. That'd be funny. We're all on the hook for our waters, kind of a poignant one. And it's not about the size of your worm. It's how you wiggle it. We'll see if you've got something better. If you've seen that one?
I've kind of variations on
it. It's variations on it, right. So anyway, if you've got something better than that, we really want to hear it. You can go to recycledfish.org and give us your good ideas. And then voting starts soon. And we'll vote and figure out who's got the best idea for a t-shirt.
I'm just shocked you're not at the royal wedding today.
Are you?
Yeah, I figured you'd be on the short list of 1900.
You know, I don't understand. Like, I heard a story yesterday. I was driving a lot yesterday, so I heard all these stories. But one of the stories was about like a survey done in England about how excited people in England were about the royal wedding, and 70% of people either don't care or couldn't care less. So 30% of people in England care. Why are we hearing so much about it around the world? Yes. I don't understand.
Yeah, and for considering our country where we, you know, we tried to get away from the monarchy, why are we so thrilled about it?
That's right. Who cares?
Such pomp and circumstance, though. It's pretty amazing when you look at the pictures.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway, I know you T-vote it.
I don't have one of those funny boxes.
All righty, cool.
What do you say? Let's go around the world of fishing in 120 seconds. Lots of stuff is going on. It's springtime. Fishing is kind of like reaching its annual crescendo, so there's lots to talk about. Sad news in the southeast where tornadoes have devastated towns and lives. It's affecting fishing, too. For example, all the ramps on Lake Martin in Alabama are closed until further notice. Missouri and Arkansas, crazy high water and flooding. Table Rock Lake is at record high levels running over the emergency spillway. All the big spring bass tournaments canceled or postponed. Oklahoma shocked up a couple of big bass during spring spawning surveys. Fish over 11 pounds from the waters of Arcadia and Watonga Lakes in the Sooner State. Go stick them, then put them back so somebody else can too. Montana is thinking about a new rule that if you want to launch a boat on their waters, you got to go through a check station first. What do you think? They're looking for public comment at three hearings in May. Florida, if you're on the beach and see horseshoe crabs making more horseshoe crabs, then tell the FWC. They're trying to find mating sites for crabs. Vermont, get it on your calendar. Your free fishing day is coming up June 11th. In Washington, D.C., the Obama administration's Restoring Clean Water Act protection that was lost through the last decade. That's very good news. On the interwebs, Fishhound's new website and mobile application lets you stay on top of the bite. Thanks to reports from thousands of guides across the country. Check it out, fishhound.com. This week's stewardship tip, fish don't smoke, so why all the butts in the water? Knock it off. If you smoke, don't throw your butt in the water. It's toxic. More fishing hoopla, moldychum.com, stewardship tips and more at recycledfish.org. I'm Teej Stouffer. We just went around the world of fishing in 120 seconds. Thanks to greentackle.com.
The Fishing Guest of the Week.
Lawrence Utenai is an interesting dude. He's an accomplished fisherman. He's a handyman and a dad. He's on a dragon boat racing team. Lawrence invented the world's first computer, Web for All, that automatically accommodates special requirements of its user. He's an adventurer. He was in the first ever canoe expedition from Toronto to Prince Edward Island. That's over 1,000 miles. And he's blind. Lawrence Utenier, welcome to the Fish Stick.
Well, thank you very much. Good to be here.
Glad you are. Glad you are. I bet you've got some really good fishing stories.
Yeah, and you know, if I could see half of them, I'd they'd be even better. But I know people have told me a few of them, anyways, things that have happened to me on the water. And but I think my favorite is, you know, we were just finishing this walleye tournament. And there's always a bit of a ritual afterwards to exchange stories of wherever you caught the fish and what you were doing. So my turn came up, and I said, "Yeah, we went for a while, and we stopped, and we caught some fish, and then we moved somewhere else, and we caught some more fish. Then we tried somewhere else, and we didn't catch anything, and then we came back." Yeah, all that to say, I'll never give away your secret spots.
I was just going to say that. You're the perfect fishing companion. You can take Lawrence to all your secret spots.
Your pre-fish? No problem.
Exactly. I kind of read some of your 2010 fish capture highlights, man. It's pretty impressive. 36-inch northern pike, 24-inch rainbow, 5-pound Laker. Man, quite the list.
7.5-foot
chin. Yep, there it is. I see that one too. Yeah.
And that's cool. You also must do a little fly fishing, because I saw that you've been down in the blue water.
Yeah, I did some blue water, and but I think that my fly fishing highlight last year was the America Cup International Fly Fishing Tournament in Colorado. And a buddy of mine said, "Hey, Lawrence, let's mess with these people and put together a team made up of people with disabilities." So they got Tred Barda, you know, he's in a wheelchair now, and a couple of Paralympic athletes. But they needed a blind guy to be on the team, and they called me up, and I said, "Fly fish, no problem, do it all the time." You know, lying like fishermen do, right? I hadn't fly fished in 30 years. But I did fly fish, and I do own a fly rod. And I don't know where it is anymore, but I know I own one. Anyway, so I fly out to Colorado, and my buddy takes me out for a test fish on this stream that's like 6 feet across. And you got to cast three pools up, and it's blowing wind coming off the mountains. And, you know, for the first hour or so, I'm not even landing in the river. I'm landing. I keep going. He goes, "No, no, left." So I go left. He goes, "No, no, now you're on the left shore." He goes, "When I say left, 6 inches." And I go, "Oh, my God, I'm going home." But, you know, I got it, and I got it. And even with the fly, I started catching them on the flies, the dry flies, and the indicators, and the drop flies. And I caught the second biggest fish of the tournament.
Wow. No way. That's super cool.
It was a blast. Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. It must be tough when the discipline that you have when it comes to dry fly fishing, because you can't see the rise. So it's all feel, right?
It's feel. But yeah. You know, I have to admit, I cheated on that one. I had, first of all, I had a local guy give me four boxes of his homemade flies. I had another guy lent me some beautiful fly rods, and I had another local guide standing right next to me, you know, giving me some heads up what's going on. So I'm, in that case, I had someone being my eyes for me. And normally I don't do that when I'm fishing. Right. I hate bobber fishing, to tell the truth. So, but in this case, you know, I had no choice. I mean, I had to mend. You had to mend. We're fishing in mega current, you know, in these big rushing rivers, and wading. And it was just a blast. We really cleaned up, though. We caught a lot of fish, 20 fish over 24 inches.
I think it was on Gore Creek, I think. I think it's Gore Creek or somewhere in the Vail Valley, right?
We were on the Blue River mostly.
On the Blue, okay, yeah. And that's, you know, for even, I mean, I can speak from my own personal, you know, experience there, is it's really technical fishing.
I got skunked there. Yeah, I took a skunking.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. You guys cleaned it up. That's great.
Yeah, super cool. Now, so, but talk about blue water fishing.
Well, I just did like I mentioned, Tred Bart, I met him at this tournament thing. And I think I impressed him when I insisted on trying out his bow and arrow thing, right? He's got this big bow, 150-pound pull bow. Mm-hmm. So they moved the target a little closer, and I was hitting the bale of hay anyways. I might have been hitting the target. Who knows? But anyways, he called me up, and he said, "Let's go catch some sailfish in Guatemala on the fly rod." So we went down there and did the bait and switch thing. Never done the bait and switch before. You know, you got to – And so Tred says, "Well, I'll talk you through the whole thing, Lawrence. No, don't worry. It's going to happen." So his first fish is coming. He goes, "It's coming in. It's coming in. Hold, hold, hold." So I'm trying to hold on to this reel. and the fish has obviously got it, and he's trying to take off with my ballyhoo, and Trent's going, hold, my hand, the reel's slipping, my hand's starting to burn. And finally he says, okay, let it have it, and just then the fish jumps. It's got my, it's all bill wrap. My ballyhoo's just swinging wildly around the thing's bill, and it's gone. And I, my hand's burnt, and I got blisters, and I think,
oh my god,
this ain't working. This isn't working. So we had five really bad bites in a row. I never hooked into a single one. So we conferenced, and I said, okay, you know what? I said, you gotta let me do this. So the idea was after that, they'd just tell me what teaser the fish was coming in on. I'd pitch back, and they'd tell me how far back to drop it, and they'd tell me when to hold, you know, so I didn't go back too far or not enough. And then they just let me know when the fish was coming in. And after that, it was just, I just did it on the feel. And after, I caught eight in a row after that. It was fantastic.
Wow, really? That is a fantastic day of that type of fishing in general. I mean, lots of people are happy to hook one. So
yeah, we had one come into the boat, too. It was, it got the mate, he stepped in front of me, between me and the sail, but he got the bill right under the armpit. Can you imagine?
Oh. Yeah.
Right, yeah. In the armpit, man. Then I'm offering the guy, I had some steroid cream, you know, for sunburns, and I'm trying to talk to this Guatemalan fella and offering him cream. You think I was trying to massage his shoulders or something. He got all disgusted with me.
That's anyway, classic.
Yeah,
that was there have been worse things impaled by marlin bills or sailfish bills. The chum had one where a gal had her breast implant punctured by a billfish.
No way!
That was a famous moldy chum post. Yes.
Wow.
She made it on. It saved her life, actually. They think.
Really?
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's those things. There's a bunch of videos online of those fish coming into the boat.
There was 32 bills broken off in the stern of the boat we were fishing in, and they actually had one come right through the head, the side of the boat. They laminated it into place and used it as a toilet paper holder.
No, that's awesome.
That is classic.
That's awesome. I mean, you've given us a little tiny snapshot of what it might be like, but what happens to you out there? I mean, we all, you know, every week we get these crazy fish stories. Everybody comes on with awesome fish stories, and we tell our awesome fish stories. All these crazy things happen to us, and we can see. I mean, what kind of things happen to you out there?
Well, you know, I figure I've gone blind three times. First time when I was eight, when they registered me blind, and I lost the center part of my vision. But that never stopped me from fishing and hunting and stuff. I had good peripheral vision. And then in my 20s, I lost that much more vision where I had to start doing things without looking. So I learned how to use Braille. I got my first guide dog. And now I don't really have any light perception at all anymore. So I can't see the shore. You know, I don't even know which way the sun's coming at me. I know if it's light day or night. That's about it. I never wanted to stop fishing. And finally I talked to this company into making a talking GPS unit that I could use right on the water. And it took a while. We worked on it and I beta tested for them and got it done. So that was my ticket to get back out on the water. First thing I noticed is boats do not go straight. You know, you just normally think the boat is going straight because you're always correcting with the steering, but they really don't go straight. And it's like when you're walking on a sidewalk, it's one thing because you can either walk up the sidewalk or back towards you know, the other direction. But if you veer off to the edge, you're going to feel the edge of the sidewalk. You're going to feel the road or the grass or whatever. Mm-hmm. You can just go 360s forever. So, you know, the technology, I got a talking compass, a talking GPS to mark my waypoints, a little beeper on the front of the boat in case something gets in my way. I mean, the boat only goes about 5 miles an hour, so I'm not, you know, I'm not ripping around out there or anything. It's got an electric motor. I can hear everything around me. But still, it's getting that boat to go straight to get where you want to go. And I just use my ears mostly. I just listen to the wind in the trees, you know, that Johnny Handyman across the lake, you know, hammering on his deck. Kids maybe on another beach at the other end of the lake to stay away from that, you know. So there's always these audible indicators, except on the really windy days on lakes where there's no one around. Then it's just, you know, then I'm really sort of then I'm going just on the waves, mostly just the waves and the wind in my face. And that's where my sailing sort of, you know, training comes into play, because with sailing, blind sailing, you're always just going by the wind and the waves and how the boat feels on the water. I won the California International Sailing Regatta last June in San Francisco, because you know, it's just one of those things I've developed from being on the water. But it's a lot of fun. Wow. You know, you think about it, these guys, they fished off the East Coast for 500 years with no technology whatsoever, and they went out in the heavy fog, and the only way they could get back to their coast, their bay, was the smell of the land, the feel of the waves, and the sound of the surf, right? I mean, that's all they had. So, I mean, I got all this electronic stuff. If I get hit by lightning, I'm going up like a sparkler. That's my only fear is lightning. God's revenge.
So your boat, I know you have one boat. It's a porta boat, right?
Yeah, it's a 12-foot plastic folding porta boat. Yeah, 70 pounds.
Super cool. And then you're also sponsored by Ranger too, right?
Yeah, I got a Ranger, and I wanted a bigger boat that I could do tournaments in, and then I could take other people out that had a good cockpit, people new to fishing, and unfamiliar with boats, and introduce them to the sport. I can get this boat. For obvious reasons. The other thing is I didn't want, you know, I'm not driving that around myself. And, sure. And I don't want some, you know, ask some guy you just met and say, hey, you want to drive my bass boat at 90 miles an hour? Yeah, sure, Lawrence, I'll drive your bass boat. Never to be seen again.
You are going to drive it once in a while.
But there's always a sighted person with me. And on that boat, though, I have, you know, I have a talking depth sounder, a talking water temperature. I still have my GPS. I love that iPilot from Minn Kota. That's a fantastic device. And I put that now on my porta boat as well. So now my boat drives itself. Just plot the course, take off, and bye-bye.
That's cool. Very cool. Lawrence, do you think you ever have near misses and you just don't know about it?
I have you know, the reason I chose the porta boat is because anything underwater I can bump into and I'm not going to hurt the boat or myself. I mean, it absorbs, doesn't make a dent, doesn't crack, doesn't hole the boat. It's made for climbing up on rocks and logs and stumps and stuff. So that's fine. You know, I mean, my boat is like my fingers. It's my feeler, right? Most people drive by avoiding stuff. I drive by going up and feeling it. Is that the shore? Boom. Is that, what's that? You know, that's weeds. I'm in the weeds now. Okay. So, I mean, I look pretty weird out there. And for anyone watching me, they probably think I'm drunk, you know? But I got the call from my wife one evening. I was fishing this little bay. Not so small. It was about a mile across. And I was on the other side. And she calls me on the two-way radio. And she goes, Lawrence, come on in. It's getting dark. Come in and have supper. So I, you know, set the course for the launch, and I'm buzzing across the lake in my little boat, 5 miles an hour. And, you know, I got the, you know, I'm just going straight. I mean, it's not fast, right? But then I'm halfway across the bay, and my little beeper on the front of the boat starts going beep, 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 which means there's something 30 feet in front of the boat. So I do a hard deport, and then, you know, and I'm on the side of my, I got, you know, blind fishing boat, just in case people are wondering. And I hear this old guy go, how much do you see anyway? And I go, holy crap, someone's right there in the middle of the lake, you know, right there. And I think they must be on a boat. They must be anchored. And so I say to him, not a thing, sir. And then I hear another guy go, holy crap, this guy's out here by himself. I can't see a damn thing. And then the other guy says, and they see me and they go, I go around them and then I get back on course and they see I'm heading for the dock. So that, then they yell, you're doing a good job, boy. Keep her up.
I can see you getting pulled over by the fish police, you know, kind of going around in a circle once in a while, and they pull you over for driving.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'll tell you, well, officer, yeah, I'm blind. Yeah, sure, buddy.
I have my boater's operator certificate, so I'm totally legal.
That's great.
That's cool. So the question isn't, have you ever bumped into anything? You bump into things all the time, right?
All the time. I do this tournament, and sometimes I'm just for the fun of it, I'll go in my little boat in the tournament, and they always make me leave last, right? So I know I'm always waiting around for everyone to take off, and, you know, and all the boats were leaving, but they were all just going out onto the lake and then waiting for another takeoff point. I didn't realize that. So then the boat that was shadowing me, they also make me take a shadow boat. He says, okay, Lawrence, come ahead. So it's really windy, you know. So I come up full speed, zzz, you know, and I don't have the beeper on, of course, because I figure out the whole damn lake to myself at this point. Everyone's gone. I plow right into the side of my friend's bass boat. he goes, Christ, Lawrence. He says, hold on, we're not leaving yet. And then I realize I'm in the middle of everybody, right? Everyone's out there just just idling, you know, waiting to take off. And I go, oh, crap, this is embarrassing.
That's awesome. You lost your sight around age 8, but it doesn't sound like it slowed you down too much. Let's kind of hear your story and, you know, tell us about some of the things you've done and tell us about you.
I guess the big part of losing your sight is not being able to drive. And when you grow up in a small town where, you know, getting a date depends on not only, you know, what kind of wheels you drive, but the fact that you have wheels, you know, it means, you know, at age 18, I had to sell the hunting dog and move to the city to get public transportation and to go to school. I mean, at that point, the only job opportunities there were was blind piano tuner. And it was pretty limited, right?
Yeah.
So I went to college, and I realized I wanted to do stuff to make sure other people had job opportunities. I studied employment, and I studied how to create environments that were accessible. And that's where this whole Web for All thing came into play. You know, we were trying to make Canada the most connected nation in the world to the internet back 10 years ago in 2000, 99, 98, 97 kind of thing. And I said, well, what about people who have disabilities and literacy issues? And they said, yeah, Lawrence, you know, that's true. You know, and so I did some studies, and it turns out that's a big chunk of the population. 25% have really low literacy, you know, below grade 6 and disabilities. So I created this computer that you could configure so that it would talk, squawk, large print, small print, left hand keyboard, right hand mouse, whatever you want, and thousands of combinations. You just sort out what you want, save it onto your smart card, and then when any time you used one of these computers, just swipe your smart card, and it set itself up to do interface with you the way you wanted to. And that was sort of groundbreaking technology that is being rolled out in mainstream platforms now around the world. And cool. it's quite cool to do that. But, you know, having said all that, I always had this hole in my heart about fishing, and I really wanted to get back out on the water. The last time I took my I had an aluminum boat for years, and the last time I took it out by myself, I took my oldest kid with me, my 5-year-old daughter, and I put her in the front of the boat, and I grabbed the oars, and I said, okay, sweetie, just tell Daddy which way, you know, this is your left arm, this is your right arm. We get out about 5 minutes. She's going, no, the other way, Dad. And it's really windy. We're in this little lake in Cape Breton Island out on the east coast of Canada. And it's just rocks and wind and waves. And I said, okay, sweetie, it's okay. Daddy will get us back. So I just listened for the shoreline, for the breakers. And I got us back to shore. And I said, yeah, okay, don't tell Mommy.
Oh God, that is classic. You know,
I could. It never left me. I just had to get back on the water, and that's this whole blind fishing boat thing, you know, yeah. Came up.
Yeah, and it's kind of and being on the water is a little different because there's no boundaries, right? It's like
there's no edges.
Yeah,
that's it. There's nothing to bump into for the most part. Yeah. You know, it's so liberating. I love it. I love going out in the water, catching a fish. Getting that connection with nature, you know, feeling that fish, feeling the bite as well, of course, the most exciting part, and then getting the fish into your hands and having that direct connection with nature. It's so much better than someone saying, hurry, look at the deer, you know, when you can hold that fish. And then, and of course, you know, getting back is always fun. It's always nice to get back to shore.
How does the blind fishing boat work? You talked about the sensors, and you talked a little bit about the boat, and it's a porta boat, and I think we've got a little bit of a picture in our minds, and we'll put a picture up on the show notes page too. But how did it come about? Who helped you develop it? Let's hear about some of these guys who helped make it happen.
Well, you know, the key is the GPS, right? Because whenever I get to a new body of water, I'll go with my wife or a buddy, and I'll mark my GPS spots. You know, the first one is always maybe 50 feet off the dock. And then I have a little a homing device that I hang underneath the dock, and I can trigger that remotely. Mm-hmm. So when I get back and the GPS says you have arrived, you know, I know the dock's within 50 feet somewhere. And then I just trigger the homing device, and it goes beep, 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 beep. So I know where the dock is, right? And then I can just go up to that beep, beep sound or whatever and you know, slowly move in on the dock with my boat hook. I reach out with my 9-foot boat hook till I feel the dock. But having that GPS system and marking the spots, different spots on the water, gives me the ability to navigate point to point. The talking compass gets the boat pointed in the right direction, because GPS doesn't know which way you're pointed until you actually start moving. And around the dock, you know, you don't want to be moving in the wrong direction, you know, because it always looks, people start laughing when you head off and they see the blind fishing boat and everything, and then it does a 180 and crashes back onto shore. Rough start, but I always have a few of those, you know, get the thing pointed out the right direction. But, you know, the depth is always nice to know once you're out there and you got the talking depth sounder. As long as you're in, you know, 10 feet of water, you're good. You know, you can go anywhere. When the water starts getting to be, you know, 4 feet, 3 feet, 2 feet, you know, you're getting pretty close to shore. You might, I generally slow it down at that point, you know, and start feeling around with my boat hook or something, or just listening. There's always stuff on the shore you can hear. There's always, I think the biggest picture that draws in my mind is when another boat goes by, a motorboat, and then, you know, okay, I know where the motorboat came from and where it left. And so I get an idea of the length of the lake just by that sound. And then the wake rolls up on the shores on both sides. And just the sound, the distance of that sound of those three waves rolling up on the shore and how long it takes for that to get there paints a perfect picture of the parameter of the body of water you're on in my mind.
Mm. That's pretty cool.
So, Lawrence, do you have a fish finder that talks to you too?
I wish. You know, I mean, the big fish alert, that's about it.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Seems like
I keep threatening Lowrance and Hummingbird that I'm going to build one and put them out of business.
Absolutely. Because it would be applicable just beyond the use that you have, you know?
Well, that's it.
You're
Look at the cars, right? I mean, all the GPS systems in the cars talk now.
Yeah, totally.
And, you know, all these guys are getting older, and they're having to wear bifocals and trifocals out in the boat to see their electronics. People tell me they get tired of it, having to change glasses to see, you know, how deep the water is. They'd love it if they could just have some of that information automated.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, it seems like the technology is there. We just need to apply the technology, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. It's the interface. It's not talking too much, but talking enough when you want it, because otherwise it just goes on and on and on. You just want to kick it out of the boat, you know?
No doubt. I don't believe those fish finders anyway.
Yeah.
It's so funny. Even when you can't see them, you're like, yeah, there's not really any fish down there. It's like, oh, there's a whole school of fish underneath us. I never catch fish when it says they're right out of the boat. Do you? I mean, seriously. I can't read them, so I don't know. Maybe it's all a hoax. Anyway.
Well, that's the walleye guys are using those down-looking.
Now
they're realizing that those marks are actually just small bait balls, you know?
Yeah.
Those big bees are small bait balls.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. We know that you're somebody who talks about the universal accessibility of fishing and how it really kind of levels the playing field. Talk about that.
I mean, I'm lucky. I get sponsored by some good companies to fish some good baits, you know, like Ultra Tungsten, and the Tungsten Weights is a really good feel. The Power Pro Braid and, you know, Shimano makes some great rods, really super sensitive rods. And, you know, to be able to feel what's going on below, it's like an extension of my finger, right? And I think the best guys, I mean, the ones who are winning all the tournaments, they understand it got a feeling your tools, their instruments. I mean, I talked to a lot of guys, and they're fishing. You know, they're holding their fishing rods like clubs or spears, and they're not. They're sensitive, up to $500 instruments. It's not a beaten stick, and if you hold it right, and you're not making your hand go numb because you're gripping it with the death grip, the rod's not going to get pulled out of your hand. You're going to tighten up on it when the time comes. But you're not going to lose it. But if you're gripping it too hard, your hand's going to go numb. So you got to hold it. You got to have a well balanced rod. You got to hold it nicely so it's at the balance point. So you don't have to grip it hard. And if you're not gripping it hard, it's a feel thing. And 90% of fishing is about the feel, right? I mean, it's all about trying to look underwater with sonar and Polaroid glasses. But when it comes right down to it, you know, most of the time we catch fish, we don't see them coming. And So I've got an advantage. Sighted guys, they're looking around at the candy on the docks and other boats and, you know, the eagle flying over top, and they're missing bites. I mean, you put a hand in a rod in the hand of someone who can't see, and their hands are their eyes. So they're totally focused on that rod. And that's where you got to be when your line's in the water. You got to be totally focused on your rod, your line, your lure, what's happening. You got to be visualizing what's happening. And without sight, you have that, your focus is much sharper. It's much steadier. And so we have an advantage for sure when it comes to that kind of fishing.
Very interesting. And you're talking about you're fishing lures and live bait, right? Like that type of presentation.
My first kind of when I show up somewhere, my first bait is a spinner bait, and I'll use my spinner bait to determine what's out there. It extends my feel, 100 feet around the boat, 360, and I'll do I'll understand what's on the surface and then subsurface, and then I'll explore the water column and then explore the bottom composition as well, all with a spinner bait because it's so totally weedless, and I'll catch some fish while I'm doing it. But really, it's my sensing lure. Then my next favorite is the frog. I mean, I love fishing my snag-proof frogs, man. That's just the best thing in the world. You want to have excitement. Close your eyes when you're fishing a frog. The scientists have documented that sounds in the dark are 5 times scarier than they are. So you want to hear, you go fish frogs at night, and you hear those big splashes happening outside the boat. Pee your pants, man. It's the best. I love it. So that, I mean, those two things. And of course, jigs and plastics of any type. I love fishing that. I chuck my crankbaits, my Rapala crankbaits all the time. And, I'll drag them around all over the place. Bottom bouncing for walleye. I don't use a lot of live bait. I'm just, a little squeamish about leeches and stuff, where they end up. I dropped the leech. Oh no, where'd it go? But I'll fish them. There's a one blind tournament in the United States in North Carolina called the Visually Impaired Persons Fishing Tournament, and there's 500 blind people show up for that thing, and everyone gets a double hook rig. They're fishing off the piers. We all got the same rod, same line, same hook, same bait, same weight, and you have to, so it's 100% technique and some luck, but nothing it's total live bait. We're fishing with bloodworm, and that's an interesting test. Ben, you see some blind people kicking butt out there, kicking butt. It's just amazing. By the way, I won it last year, so
nice.
Nice luck.
I've been kicked out of the States. Go home, Canadian.
Yeah, have you had a chance to fish with any of the other legends of bass fishing?
I wish I could say that I have, but I think I'm a little too intimidating for them all.
That's
fine. Get your ass kicked by one guy.
Well, maybe be cool to arrange that somehow, Tiege, wouldn't it?
Yeah, Dave Mercer's up in your neck of the woods, and it would be easy to make that introduction. Do you know Dave or ever worked with Dave?
Yeah, I run into him quite often at the shows. We both speak at these sportsman shows and so on, and he lives about a couple hundred miles from me. And he's a great fellow, real entertainer. And he does most of his fishing, his shows he does by himself, right? So So there's not much opportunity, but we will fish together at some point. I'm sure about it. And we exchange emails, and we're always chatting, and I just love him. Fantastic guy.
We're going to have him on. We're teed up to have him on the guest at some point here in the not too distant future.
Well, you put it to him. You tell him
I will.
Tell him to take Lawrence out night fishing. Get his ass kicked.
Okay, we're going to arrange for this. We're going to arrange. This is going to be a marriage made in fish stick.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I cannot believe you are so full of good stories. I can't believe how fast the time is going. I just looked at the clock, and I cannot believe how fast the time's going. We should bring it around to conservation. We know this is something that is a passion of yours.
The Fish Stick Weekly White Hot Conversation Topic is a little segment we like to call Don't Break the Toy.
Beyond being a passionate angler, you're truly a steward. You make your living in environmental stewardship. What are you working on? Let's hear about it, because we know you got a good story there.
Well, like I mentioned, I did my master's in environmental studies, and so I was surrounded by tree huggers for 4 years. And I lived in Sweden for a year and got to understand what goes on there. You know, it's to me, it's really important. While I was at university, I worked on the East Coast, you know, on these homemade wooden dories as a cod fisherman, just hand lining for cod with these maritimers who built their own boats. And I could hold my own. I could catch fish. And but then I saw the collapse of that cod fishery, where we would go out and catch 2,000 pounds of fish in a day between three of us just on hand lines. You know, by the end of it, after 10 years, by 1992, 93, when they shut it down, we were catching 200, you know, pounds of cod, if that, you know, maybe 15 fish. It wouldn't even pay for the gas. And it wasn't us that was wiping out the cod stocks. It was these other big factory trawlers that sit out there for days on end, fish 24/7. So, I mean, I've seen how the devastation of these fleets, and now, you know, you see this other devastation from our oil sands and other mining and resource extraction, hydroelectric dams, and mercury poisoning on fish. You know, so there's so many things going on. I mean, we all got focused on the Gulf of Mexico last year, but we've got tons of little Gulf of Mexico kind of stories happening. And I'm putting a little documentary together now where I'm just trying to capture and to tell those stories and to tell them from the perspective of the people who live and make their living from, and who depend and who are totally connected with the water. I want to hear, you know, from them, from those people who have, who are totally connected with it, you know? And, so I'm traveling around hearing their stories, and I want to be a voice for them.
Wow. That's really cool. What's like, let's hear one of the stories.
Well, you know, I was just telling you about this white sturgeon on the Fraser River on the west coast of Canada. That was a fish that was harvested 100 years ago using steam lines, fishing lines hooked up to steam engines. And they would haul in these 1,000-pound, 1,200-pound sturgeon one after another until they wiped 90% of them out, and then they shut the fishery down. Well, the fishery didn't get shut down. They just ran out of fish. You know, they make it was no longer profitable, so they just stopped fishing them. Mm-hmm. These things came back. You know, and now they live in the middle of the fourth largest city in Canada, right in Vancouver, in the Fraser River. And that river is just being built around right up to condominium towers on the shoreline. You know, the shoreline's being totally destroyed. The gravel beds where these fish spawn are being extracted, so that gravel is perfectly washed gravel. So they're using that in the construction business. It's right next to the fastest growing city in Canada. You know, there's no commercial value to these fish, so the government does no reason to sort of step in and manage them and make sure they're not being exploited. The guides who fish them realize that it's a world resource. People fly all over the world to catch these fish and let them go, but they're being, you know, there's 350 boats now. We're catching these fish, you know, 365 days a year. There's no place where these fish can go where they're protected. And they're being stressed in the guides saying, you know, the guides who live on the water and making their living, taking people out catching these things, say we have to have some marine protection areas. We need to have some seasons where these fish can have a chance to spawn. We need to protect their spawning beds. We need to protect their shoreline habitat. You know, we need to protect the river a little bit so that they have a chance. I mean, they've been around for 175 million years, and we're just about to wipe them out. We're taking our second kick at the can at wiping them out in 100 years, right? It's not right. I mean, these fish deserve to be around just because of the city. It's not right.
That is good, and we can't wait to see the documentary. If it's not enough that you're a truly gifted, talented angler who's a blind guy, you're a blind filmmaker too.
I didn't even notice that. That's how crazy that is. I was like, because like he's making a movie. I was like, yeah, cool. I was like, yeah, it's pretty. That's a testament to you, Lawrence. That, you know, the fact that, you know, your sight impaired isn't even a factor when it comes to that part of the discussion. Hats off to you.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you. Cool. Pleasure to be on the show with you guys. Yeah, really, it's fun. Fantastic the work you guys are doing, and it's nice to be associated with you guys on this. You know, the conservation front. I love it. You know, our lifestyles flow downstream. It's so true.
Brian Bennett, you've usually got a good quote for us here to kind of season the end of the show.
Yeah, I got one. It's kind of an old standby with a little bit of a wrinkle to it. You ready? It's by Rainn Wilson, who happens to be a comedian. So here you go.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, may we present the Fish Stick quote of the week.
Feed a man a fish and he'll eat for a day. Feed a fish a man and he'll eat for like 2.5 months.
It does much Dwight on The Office, right? So where can we find everybody on the web? Lawrence, thanks for hanging out with us on the shtick. You've got some presence on the internet, right?
Yeah, blindfishingboat.com. And there's, you know, the boat's not blind, and it makes no sense. But it's the internet, right? So there's just need those three words to search on. If you search on blind fishing or blind boat or fishing blind, you'll hit it.
Right on, right on. Well, thanks for hanging out with us on today's Fish Stick.
My pleasure. Real honor, guys.
Hey, it's cool too, Lawrence, before we jump into my kind of little web presence, is you're sponsored by Yukonuba too. That must be for your pooch. And I think, what do you, looks like you got a Bernese
mountain dog? It's a Bernese mountain dog. Yeah. Yeah.
It's awesome dogs. Awesome.
Yeah. He's fantastic. I tell you, they're so smart, but I spoiled him now. He's been fishing with me so much. He just goes crazy on the fish. Actually, when I got followed because he hits the gunnel. He like, he wants to jump out of the boat. Boom. He hits the gunnel. And I know I got a fish following my spinner bait at that point.
Yeah. There you go.
Cool. Just got to get him some Polaroids.
There's your fish finder for you.
Exactly.
Brian Bennett, it's your turn. Where do we find you on the web?
You can find me at www.moldychum.com and make sure you check out the Wolverine meets Asian carp video today.
It's funny. It's good. Hey, Michael Morrow, you've got an internet site, don't you?
Yep. And the best place to get to it for our listeners is thefishstick.com. Takes you right there. And you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Morrow Media.
Teej Stouffer here. Find me at recycledfish.org. I'm also on Facebook and Twitter. And that's the shtick for another week. Thanks again to our friends at Spot, makers of Spot Hug, which keeps your boat safe both when you're in it and when you're not. Thanks also to greentackle.com, who introduces Fish Hitch to benefit stewardship through recycled fish. Remember, our lifestyle runs downstream. Good cheer, blessings, and great adventures.
Okay, Lawrence, this is where people usually take us out with the song, our guests. So if you could just bust out one of your favorites, that'd be awesome.
Really?
No.
Oh, come on. It would have been complete. We've only had one guest actually do it.
I'll sing for you.
Come on.
Hey, give us a song.
This is one I sang for years when I was living out at Cape Breton Island in my summers. It was like out on the Myra. Out on the Myra on a warm afternoon. Old men go fishing with black line and spoon, and if they catch nothing, they'll never complain. Oh, I wish I was with them again. There you go.
That's nice. Awesome! You're the man!
You're the best guest ever. No, absolutely. That'll go right in the headlines when I post that. And he took us out with the song.
Perfect.
Second guest to do it. And that was a real song.
Yeah, that was much better than Jeremiah Was a Bullfrog.
Is it O'Keefe?
Yeah.
O'Keefe.